Well, good evening, everybody. It is Bill Crawford along with Damon Whitten. We're at the Antlers. Nice little crowd on hand considering the weather outside. We've got a blustery day in Sault Ste. Marie, one of those winter days. We haven't had many of this winter. But we'll muddle through here tonight with another Laker hockey show. We got Dave Pateson, the director of athletics at Lake Superior, will join us later in the show tonight. And the big news today coming out, and it's national now, they put it out from the office today, and that's that the new league that the Lakers will be going into in 2 years' time is going to be called the Central Collegiate Hockey Association. That's pleasant news to my ears. I think that's a great idea, and it's going to be a good marketing tool for the league. A lot of people downplaying it online, thinking, who cares, blah, blah, blah. But you know something? The Central Collegiate Hockey Association was one tremendous league for a long time, and then the Big Ten decided to blow it all up, and I blame it all on them. But one way or the other, TV contracts speak, and everybody else has to go find a new place to play. We went to the WCHA for 7-8 years, and now we're going back to the CCHA, and it will be a 7-team league. And before we get into this past weekend and what's coming up this coming weekend with Damon, a little bit about the CCHA. You played in it. You know all about it.
Well, yeah, it's, I think, a really exciting day for that news to break and, you know, shed a little bit of light on what's going to happen as we move forward after next year and the last year in the WCHA. And as you mentioned, and I know, Bill, your history with the league is long and strong. And as everybody listening and our Laker fans, you know, I was out in the rink today looking up. We have 8 banners hanging up there in the CCHA. And as you said, you know, I played in it myself. I grew up in Michigan. So, you know, I have many years as a young kid going down to Joe Louis, watching Lake State come down and play at Joe Louis Arena and, you know, going to the GLI and, you know, the CCHA battles and those teams making that up as well. And in the playoffs down there for many years as well. It was one of the things we looked forward to as a family as I was growing up is going down to the CCHA playoffs and being a part of that as well. So I think it's a really exciting news. I know for all of our alumni at Lake State and Bowling Green and Ferris and, you know, so many other schools that there's a rich history and a rich tradition that we're all really excited about. So, again, it's, you know, a year and a half off or so, and we got a lot of things to accomplish before we get to that CCHA. But I think a really exciting day, a really positive day to draw upon that history in that tradition, and you know, we're looking forward to that when the time is appropriate, when the time is right.
Yeah, it's the announcement that came out today. A lot of conjecture around, a lot of people online thinking, well, you know, when does Western Michigan come back to the league or Miami or whatever? I don't think you're going to see that happen, not for a long time, if it ever happens. National Collegiate Hockey Conference has some pretty stiff fines if you pull out, and I guess you could try to work a deal somewhere down the line where maybe Arizona State and Minnesota State go to the Nacho League and Western and Miami come back to the CCHA, but they got to want to do it, and you'd have to waive all the fees and all the penalties and all that sort of thing, but that's a long way off. I think the CCHA is going to be a 7-team league for a while until, you know, the coaches get together and maybe bring somebody, one or two or even 3 teams in to make it a little bit more palatable. 7 teams could be a little tough with the schedule.
Yeah, it can be. There are some challenges, and I think, you know, ideally it always is that balance and that even look. But I think you're right. You know, I don't think the shifting and the moving around is totally done, you know, this go around with this shakeup and the next wave. Just as everybody kind of knew when the Big Ten came along and the NCHC and everything happened that time, it was the first kind of shift out west that had happened in many, many years. And I think a lot of people knew at that time that it wasn't done. And I think that's the same here. I think you said there's a good group of 7 that has strong ties and that central and Midwest feel to it and region to it that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, from there, like you said, it's going to take some time to see what happens and what shifts out. And, you know, I do think, you know, it was time and maybe a little overdue to make this happen there. So, again, I think we're looking forward to it. The name's in place now, and some of those other things will be looked at from the presidential level, the athletic director level, certainly at the coaching level. You know, we have a lot of different discussions and good discussions on that. But for us, it's about celebrating, you know, the naming and the branding of the new league. We'll look forward to some of the branding initiatives that will, you know, make it a little updated and newer. But again, that history tradition is something that we'll pull on, and you know, so many. And again, I think, you know, as that kicked off, you know, we talked about you today and your long history with it and the tradition here at Lake State here. So I think it's a real positive thing, and we're looking forward to that launch again when it's appropriate. There's a lot of time left as we wind down this season and have another year to look forward to with the WCHA. But, you know, there'll be a lot of talk, I think, over the next year on that as well.
Yeah, if you have a seven-team conference or league that has a solid schedule, it's going to leave a lot of openings for non-conference games for everybody, too. It could be interesting how that weighs out in the end, too.
Well, that's a conversation we have yearly right now. You know, there are teams in every league, and in certainly our current league as well, that, you know, some like the 28-game schedule, some want to go to 26, some 24, and there's certainly, you know, equality balances when you go to an unbalanced schedule. It's hard to maybe, you know, think there's a true champion depending on your strength of schedule and who you get four times versus two. So there's a lot of different scenarios that that come along. But you are right. That is, you know, for that footprint and maybe for some of the things going on, it can help us, you know, schedule some other programs as well. But, you know, that stuff will all have to be kind of, you know, lined up and weighed out to look at the number of games and how you fill that out, things like that. So it's very doable to make a seven game. You could actually get a pretty balanced schedule pretty easily, and there's some good things about having a balanced schedule, you know, that's a little early for all that talk as well.
Yeah, next season we're going to have the same sort of thing we do now. We'll have a 10-team league. It'll still have the two Alaskas involved and Alabama Huntsville, and you got to wonder what's going to happen with those programs down the road. I've talked to some of the people at Alaska. They really don't know for sure what they're going to do or what they can do. What are their options? I mean, they're going to be stuck here in no man's land. They're way up there. They're not going to be able to play a whole lot of home games. Who's going to want to go up there? I mean, it costs a fortune. That's why they're not in the league anymore in the future. And same with Huntsville. It's a long, long ride down there, and we're kind of a bus league, and they can't afford really to fly everywhere all over the place. So, you know, you got to wonder what's going to happen with those programs.
Yeah, some hard questions, you know, that will come up. And look at, you know, I spent a couple of years up at Anchorage and have a lot of you know, great friends up there and people in that department and you know, care a lot about that program. And I think we all do. You know, college hockey is a very, you know, intertwined sport. We're all very connected with only 60 programs. And so the passion for our sport, more so than any, you know, school or institution, runs strong there. And, you know, there are going to be some tough conversations, and hopefully as a body we can come together and, you know, find a healthy approach for every school, all 60 institutions. And I know, you know, as the Big Ten came on board, everybody talked about, you know, future growth and who was next to come on board. And I think that's still the hope for some Western expansion and to help those schools out there. You see Arizona State right now, you know, doing a good job as an independent and making that happen there. So, yeah, a lot to be worked out. And, you know, hopefully those conversations will take in the future of those programs and how we can all help them and how they can stay strong and navigate, you know, the future over the next couple of years here.
Yeah, it's going to be very difficult for the two Alaskas and Alabama Huntsville to maintain programs. And you hate to see anything in Division I. We've got 60 teams now. Could be we'll have 57 in the very near future. Let's talk a little bit about this past weekend and what's coming up this coming weekend. It's a really big week at Lake Superior State. It's senior night coming up on Saturday. Northern Michigan will be here for two games, a team that is very strong in the WCHA right now. But this past weekend, I thought it was a huge success on Saturday night. Nobody knew for sure what we were going to draw in the way of a crowd at GFL at the Gardens in the Canadian Sioux, but it was a good crowd. Thankfully, we scored three goals in the second period. We win the hockey game 4-1. Friday night's game, it was scoreless right up until Yuki Miura, five men into the shootout, gives the Lakers the extra point. But, you know, all in all, a great weekend for us because the Lakers got 5 out of 6 possible points, and that's what we wanted.
Yeah, and I guess I'll do a quick recap as we typically do. As you said, Friday night, I thought we actually played outstanding. I thought it was our better 60 minutes of hockey. You know, we were pretty dominant in many facets of the game, except for the important one where you got to score and, you know, get that done in regulation in that 5-on-5 overtime. But, you know, heavily outshot them. I thought we had time of possession. I thought it was unique that game. I think we had 17 seconds of power play time until there were almost 8 minutes. So, you know, somehow that to me doesn't equate when you control time of possession and shots and quality attempts, things like that. So that was a little bit frustrating to handle that. But, you know, the hard part is, you know, to not get the 3 points. And certainly Yuki Miura responded in the shootout. I thought the ovation when Yuki was announced was outstanding. I didn't know he was such a fan favorite and so popular along the school. But it was great to hear the ovation for Yuki. You know, he's been really good for us. You know, really a little bit unheralded as of late, where he's been such a great penalty killer. He's blocked a ton of shots for us. And that man, that line with Manz and Muka and Miura has been really good, the triple M there. And so it was good to have Yuki step up and get that extra points. You know, Merrick's Mittens had an unbelievable performance. Didn't have to do much late in the game, but in the first period, I thought we were loose with the puck. We had some bad turnovers early, gave up a couple odd man rushes, a breakaway or two early on from in tight. And Merrick's was unbelievable, had a great game, well-earned shutout. You know, really disappointed on Saturday night that we were a minute 16 away from back-to-back shutouts from Merrick's. Again, I thought he earned that, deserved that. Didn't have maybe as much work to do on Saturday night, but I was a little disappointed in our team in front of him to not close that out. But as you mentioned, that offensive explosion, we scored three goals, and I think within three, 4 minutes in the second period, you know, that was a big explosion there, and it really broke their backs in a short order there with a good effort. Braden Gelsinger, I thought, keyed it. He made a great pass on the first goal to Ashton Calder. And I thought for a game that was celebrating the Twin Sioux, to have Ashton Calder score the first goal of the game as a Sioux Michigan native was very fitting. We've talked a lot about Ashton lately and how well he's played. So it was a great goal. What a finish. He goes to his backhand and just under the bar, a real highlight goal for Ashton Calder. But again, Braden Gelsinger, a great vision to make that happen. And then Braden had a really nice goal a little bit later as well. So I thought Braden's best game of the year. He's been very, you know, besieged by injuries all season long. So really good to get Braden going as well. So that was a big flurry there. Jacob Nordquist, you know, after a long extended, we had about 45 seconds, a minute 30 or so in the zone, 3-4 grade A's on a flurry, and then Nordy got it instead of just kind of burying his head and trying to blast it. Kind of that intelligence that Jacob brings to our team. He was just kind of real poised and found a lane to the net, just kind of broke that thing wide open there. So yeah, a big victory. And as you mentioned, I thought it was a great event. We went in not sure, you know, all week long. Really the last 2 years it's been kind of, you know, what's this going to look like? How are we going to get this done? So it took a long time to put this together. You know, we're very fortunate that GFL Gardens and Rob Santa Maria was a great partner along with his staff. Tim Lukinda, along with the Greyhounds, you know, on our board of trustees. Tim was very, you know, willing to work with us, and you know, we needed them to be great partners to make this successful. And we appreciate all Tim did. And then I think our department deserves just a huge kudos. You know, I know for David, we'll be on with you shortly. You know, what this put on his plate was tremendous. And I think really the two that, you know, did a ton behind the scenes, Hunter Perry and Kelsey Smith in particular, certainly others as well. But, you know, they took on a lot to make this event go on and get it together and did a great job. So they deserve huge kudos there. And I'm sure David will allude to it a little bit more, but also our senior management team. You know, we needed everybody to buy into this. You know, our admissions played a big role. Our foundation played a big role. The alumni event, I heard, was one of the best attended alumni events that we've had. You know, admissions, we had a great turnout for admissions over there. So it took a lot. Our student, I heard the Sioux Blasters, I wasn't able to get over there before the game, but you know, we had a great student section and they brought a ton of energy, and that's a lot of the feedback I've heard. It was a different feel for, you know, our non-traditional fans, the Sioux Ontario natives, you know, who maybe have not seen us or been to a college game. The energy in that building is much different than a Greyhounds game there. So I think they really enjoyed, you know, our fans and certainly our student section, the way they cheer and you know, jeer maybe the other team as well. So I thought just a great event, and, you know, the result certainly was a good part of that. But a lot of people deserve a lot of credit for putting that on.
Yeah, it worked out very, very well. I think probably the right down to announcements in a rink and the role Matt Pocket played interviewing people, and it worked out really well. I thought it was a really well-run event. The only shortcoming, going back across the bridge took 45 minutes, but hey, that's a price to pay, and it was a really good night over at GFL Gardens and a good weekend for the Lakers. You get 5 out of 6 points. I mean, Huntsville's not a great team, but they know how to stick check and they know how to get in your face, and they're a tough team, and you don't score a lot of goals against them. They've had a good record this year against a lot of good teams.
And, yeah, they're playing good hockey, so it was good. Our in-house feed that we typically watch, our coaches feed that we do most of our video playback, was tighter than we usually like. It was a tight cut, so you didn't get as good of a feel. So I actually watched it back on Flow Hockey Saturday night, and you know, I thought it was an entertaining game. You know, I got to go home, and like I said, after we got across the bridge and unpacked and you know, settled in there a little bit, I got home late-ish and then, you know, couldn't get to sleep. So I watched the game back on Flow Hockey, and you know, thought it was an entertaining hockey game. It was up and down, it was hard hitting, it was competitive. You know, I love that Alex Ambrosio stood up for Yuki. I thought they got a little little loose late and took a couple liberties with our players there, including Yuki, who was down low and took a bad hit, and Alex Ambrosio stuck on him. So I thought a really entertaining hockey game, and you know, that certainly helped. And I think NCAA hockey and our brand sells itself because it is such a great game. And you know, I like the way we're playing. We're playing our best hockey of the year. I think we're 4-2-4 in our last 10 games, and probably should be a little bit more wins in that mix if we could you know, get the offense on certain nights. You know, it seems we break open a couple nights and have some big scores, and then we struggle on those other nights there. But I like the way we're playing. Again, I thought Mitz, you know, very easy could have back-to-back shutouts. So he's playing well. Braden Gelsinger is going. The McKay line's going. You know, Ashton's been hot. You know, Max Humitz has been good all season long. So I think it's a real good time for us right now to continue to play well and harness this a little bit. We've got a similar structure to our week this week as last week, where today was more of an off day for our guys to kind of rest and recover. It's certainly late in the season, so a lot of nagging injuries and banged up and things like that. So we're trying to do the best we can to stay fresh and excited. And I think our guys sense you know, the way we played, and you know, now you just get to come back again Friday against a good opponent and be ready to go. I think it's, you know, really hard to believe it's senior night on Saturday. I just can't believe you know, this class, it's their time to be through in the season as well. So a lot going on, and then you throw Czech slash Survive in as well, and it's going to be an awesome weekend. And just for me, it's really hard to believe it's our final home weekend, but we're excited for it, and I think we're playing our best hockey, so it's gonna be a great weekend of hockey.
All right, we got lots of questions tonight from our fans. I've got a lot more questions too. One before we get out of here: Max Humitz took a game misconduct late in the hockey game on Saturday night. He is eligible to play on Friday and Saturday this weekend, is he not?
Correct. Yeah, Max will go. So fortunately, we're good there. You know, and again, I got to watch it back. I didn't see it live. I caught the tail end of it and thought it maybe, you know, could have been late. And I think watching it back, there wasn't much to it. I'm not sure it deserved a five. You know, I wish they would have called it less on the ice and then went and reviewed it, because I'm not sure it would have been a 5-minute major. But, you know, that was the call. So we lost him for that game, but he'll be good to go for this weekend.
All righty. That was one of the questions from the fans tonight. We got lots to talk about with Northern and Senior Night and Czech slash Survive. We'll be right back to the Antlers on ESPN 1400. All right, we are back for the second segment of the Laker Hockey Show tonight. Damon Witten's with us. David Pateson, the Director of Athletics at Lake State, will join us here shortly on the show tonight. We got a lot of questions from fans here tonight. And Lakers are going up against a very good Northern Michigan team this weekend. I think they were shocked last week, stunned, as they say, on their own ice. They got beat 5-0 and 5-1 by Bemidji State. And I've been saying all year, this Bemidji State team's on a mission. They're a very good team. They're a dark horse team. They're going to be in the NCAA tournament, I think, and they're going to be tough. And they're going to be tough in a couple of weeks when they play at home against Minnesota State to finish off the regular season. And, boy, they really spanked Northern Michigan. So now we got angry Wildcats coming to the Sioux, a team that relies a lot on offense, Damon. They got a lot of big scorers. Leading goal scorer in the nation, the sophomore Griffin Loughran with 21 goals. They've got Darian Craighead having a heck of a senior year, 26 points, 12 of those are goals. Vincent DeMay out of L.A. is a really good scorer, 14 goals, and yet they couldn't score last weekend against Bemidji. The goaltending of Driscoll and the defensive core did a good job against him, and now we got to deal with him here this weekend.
Yeah, I had my eyes on that series. I was interested to see how that play out. Like, as you said, Bemidji's been on a bit of a mission, you know. Zach and Mike like to kind of say Bemidji was us last year. You know, they're getting all the right pieces firing at the right time and, you know, having a really strong year. And so it was interesting. Driscoll did play very well, certainly when he needed to, made some huge saves. And, you know, that's not the way I thought that series would play out over two games there. But, you know, so we will get an angry Northern team. You know, they had Mankato the weekend before, and Mankato took you know, both games as well. So they're coming in on 0-4 streak here. And that's probably not a great thing, because they will be angry and fired up. And so we're going to see that. So there's some interesting, you know, dynamics to their lineup. You mentioned Griffin Lorraine, who's having a terrific year. You know, he plays a little bit like some Huntsville guys, where he's very, he can be over the edge. He can be dirty. He can yap quite a bit, and then he'll turn around and kind of dive. He's a little guy. He's only like 5'6", I think. So he's a little guy. So I think our discipline, you know, coming off Huntsville, there's some similarities there in terms of size of players and maybe style of play a little bit with trying to draw penalties and you know, maybe embellishing there. So they've got Lorraine, they've got Redmond, a couple of guys, you know, the transfer there, they all go 5'6", 5'7". So three or four of their top forwards are just really undersized guys who are very quick, very skilled. So it's really important to defend them properly and play them with discipline. And then they mix in the guys like Craighead and Nardi, who have big, more size and, you know, a little bit different dimension back there as well. Obviously, you know, one guy I don't think you mentioned is Ballou.
Yeah.
I think he's the all-time NCAA or the active NCAA leading defensive scorer right now. So a very, you know, experienced, poised defenseman, you know, creates a lot for them and does a really good job for them as well. And though they're very good in the power play, you know, a little bit off the last few weeks versus their opponents, but that's really how they got a lot of their offense throughout the season, was having a very dangerous power play. So they do a really good job there as well. So there's a lot of different elements you have to be aware of against this team. And certainly those top lines in particular are very, very dangerous. And, you know, for us getting our matchups and our guys recognizing who's on the ice and defending at a high level. And I think that's, you know, an area we've been really good at since Christmas or just before Christmas. You know, I think we're 9th or 12th in the nation in defense since Christmas time. So, that was an issue for us early on, and you know, we spent a lot of time trying to correct that. And I give our guys a lot of credit that they've bought into those adjustments and they've taken them to heart, and we're defending at a much better level now. So we'll need that this weekend against a very high-powered Northern Michigan offense.
Yeah, you know, Merricks has really improved his stats too. He really helped himself on the weekend, allowing only one goal in the 2+ games, and he's down now to 2.66 goals against average. That's very good. 905 the save percentage. That was under 9 for much of the season. He's got it up there now. He's actually got better stats than Nolan Kent, the freshman goaltender from Northern, who's 2.75 on the goals against and 905, also same as Merricks on the save percentage. But Merricks is coming on. He's and it's obvious that our defensive game has been a lot better. And yet on the weekend, we kind of let Huntsville get behind us a few times, especially early in both games. Merricks had to be really tough the first 8 minutes of both those hockey games. You don't want to do that against Northern Michigan.
Yeah, no question. They have guys who can come in and finish and make you pay, and they have the quickness and the skill to make that happen, you know. And so again, that D awareness early on does have to improve. Mm-hmm. You know, Saturday I didn't think we were I thought we were good. I didn't mind us. We didn't give up much in the first period, but Friday we were loose for sure. And without Merricks, you know, we're staring down an early 1-0, 2-0 deficit there. So he was outstanding early Friday, and then we, you know, got it going there a little bit, and we're allowed him to rest a little bit more. But he's been good, and I you know, I haven't looked real long at his numbers since Christmas or the Vermont tournament, but I'm sure it's pretty drastically different there if we were to kind of break this down in the segment and show what he's done there. So we really like the way he's played. Obviously, we've really rode him this year as well, and he's responded. He's doing a really good job of managing those minutes and taking care of his body. So we'll look forward to, you know, what he can do, and you know, we'll need him to be strong and win that goalie battle for us this weekend.
All righty, we got some questions from our fans who are here with us tonight. We're not going to get to all of them. One of them's already been answered. Was there anything that happened at the GFL game on Saturday night that maybe either pleasantly surprised you or in some way disappointed you with that game and how it went on and the whole show that night?
Well, that's a great question. No, I, you know, no disappointments for the most part. Again, we went in a little unsure, and so we didn't quite know what to expect. I thought the attendance was a real pleasant surprise. You know, we felt like we'd have a good turnout from our students and our fans coming over, and you know, really want to thank everybody who, you know, got across the bridge and made that journey over there. That was, you know, really appreciated. Certainly to the new fans over on that side who haven't seen us. So like the attendance, I thought, you know, again, we a real credit to Dr. Pateson and Kelsey and Hunter for scripting the game out. You know, we had a video board that we don't have at home, so I thought the use of the video board, and I didn't get to catch all of it. I wanted to, you know, have a little bit better feel, but you know, from Matt Pocket doing the in-game host with them, but running the College Hockey Inc. commercials, showing our academic programs, you know, I thought it was a really well done event, and just a lot of kudos go out. So as you said, the only thing I'd like to, you know, take care of is that post game commute back over and making sure you know, if we do get to do this yearly or again next year, I want to make sure our opponents can get across and back home. You know, Mike Corbett and UAH were tremendous, you know, just flexible with everything about it. And Mike actually said on the ice after, you know, what a great event. He loved it. He was very pleased to be part of it. I think they had 8 Ontario natives on their team, so a ton of parents were up. I got to see a few of their parents, and they loved it just to play in their home province, their home country. They were blown away. But I would like to make sure we're better hosts and can find a way to get them back on the road to wherever they need to go. So that was maybe the one area.
Yeah, they came over in vans. They had Transit Connects that they were in, and they didn't bring their bus. And they were in front of us on the bridge going back, so I know they were on that bridge for 45 minutes. And that's tough when you're trying to get to your bus. And I don't know if they stayed overnight in the Sioux. I assume they did before
they headed home. They headed home.
But so they went all the way back home, and they're going to come all the way back to Mankato. That's where they're playing this weekend.
Yeah, if they went all the way home. But I think they were going home. And, you know, there's classes and things like that. And, again, they were great. And, Yorkie and I were talking, like, you know, 45 minutes more on a 12-hour trip is not that bad, but, you know, you want to get home, and the kids deserve the rest and to get back there. So that was the one area. But, you know, we appreciate UAH and Mike, you know, being Mike Corbett, being flexible with everything there. And, again, they really enjoyed it. It was good for their program, and it was a great event. So really pleased.
Yeah, a couple of questions that kind of go together here. Should the Sioux Ontario game, the GFL game, become a tradition? Do you think the Laker players could come to see it as being a home facility to actually play over there? And also, there's another question that goes right with that, the possibility of an exhibition game against the Greyhounds sometime. That's something we've looked into many times over the years. It's never been able to work because NCAA and OHL is looked at as professional hockey, so it doesn't mix. I don't see that happening, but I can see maybe it becoming kind of a tradition to play a game over there at least maybe every other year.
Yeah, I do think hard in the Greyhounds. And you know, there's some young kids in that game. They've got 16, 17-year-olds. We've got 25-year-olds. So that would be a challenge. They also start a little bit earlier. You know, our start date is probably a month or two. They're already going in the regular season. So, I don't think, and like you said, the professional view of the NCAA, because their guys go to NHL camps and come back, there's some amateurism rules that are make it challenging as well. But I do think, you know, my hope, I'll let Dr. Payton speak on for himself and, you know, his experience at previous stops and for him. But, yes, I would love to make this a yearly event. I think we could grow this. And, again, I've talked about this through the press conference and like that, but I would like to make this a hockey day in the Sioux. And it's Eagles and Birds, and it's youth hockey, it's Greyhounds and their opponent, and you know, that would be my ultimate vision, just a hockey day Sault Ste. Marie type event. You know, and you know, maybe one year it's on our side and there's an OHL game in our building. I don't know. Obviously there's a lot to work through, and the Hounds would have to be willing partners there. But I do think it was a real good first year and a first experience, and I think our players enjoyed it. You know, they did talk about a little bit disruptive, a little bit different, but when they got in that building and played, they really enjoyed the event, and I think it'd be something that I'm going to be a strong support of trying to make that happen in a, you know, certainly again and ideally yearly.
A couple of quick questions just for you, because only you can answer them here tonight. Do we have anybody or one of our assistant coaches at the NAHL Top Prospects Tournament going on this weekend?
We're watching. You know, our focus was more on, you know, being with our team, you know, this time of year with the playoff push. You know, wanting to be with our players, you know, certainly both from a special teams perspective, you know, Zach's work with our goaltenders. So it's a great event. And, you know, most years we try to get there, obviously with Detroit a lot easier, but we didn't want to lose 3 days with a limited staff to travel there and back and be there. So there's other ways to cover it that we'll use contacts and in video, things like that. But, you know, we didn't want to give up the time with our team.
One last question for you, Damon, before we let you get out of here tonight. How do you determine who is shooting in the shootout? We haven't had it this year until Friday night.
Yeah, great question. I roll the dice and see. You know, we huddle really quick. I mean, it's so a lot of our, you know, some of the guys out here who watch practices, every home Thursday we have a game called Apple, Orange, Lemon, and it's a shootout game. So, you know, if you don't score, whoever ends up not scoring, they have to eat a lemon. So that's not very pleasant. So you want to make sure you score. And then our winners, you know, they get either the apple or the orange. And sometimes we give a the best goalie either the apple or the orange and a score. So you play a little bit with the apple, orange, lemon. But, you know, as coaches, we're watching that. And sometimes the guys like to take it lightly and they're messing around. And you try to say, hey, there's points on the line. You know, we're going to be in shootouts and we want to know who can go and score. So we have a track record. Every home Thursday, we watch. And we know who can does a pretty good job out there, and you know who we're you know probably not going to use as a shooter, and you know so after the second overtime, we huddle really quick and we make a list. I think we went about four or five, maybe six deep of our list. And he saw our order a little bit, you know, for me and actually probably for Yorkie as well, Yuki was a little bit down the list, you know, and Zach really, really fought. He had a gut feeling there on Yuki and he said it early and I didn't listen after one or two there. And he came back and said, hey, I'm telling you, I got a feeling on Yuki. And so we bumped Yuki up a couple shooters there and Yuki went out and got it done. So credit to Zach for, yeah, and it was a great. And the reaction for Yuki, I thought was unbelievable. That was awesome. He's very popular on this campus and a great, great, great person. You know, Zach deserves the credit. He went out and, you know, I like that a coach can, you know, put his word on the line there and vouch for somebody and live with it if he's right and live with it when he's wrong. So credit goes to Zach Sizek on that one.
I thought it was really interesting, though. You know, I go to a lot of the shootouts on Thursdays and I said to Pat, this could go on till about 4 a.m. Neither one of these teams could score. But I tell you, I think you had the right guy up first. Nordqvist is pretty good in shootout, and he's got good hands. So that was a good choice right there. I thought he'd score, to tell you the truth. But
Ashton's had like four breakaway goals in the last couple of weeks, you know, in live games. So, you know, I like that pick, and I thought Ashton was going to get it done as well. But, no, it's good. You know, these guys do this in junior hockey. They're used to that pressure moments. And I think that's part of it as well, you know, that first shooter, there's a lot of pressure on that guy, you know, to be the first one up, and we haven't done it much this year. So, you know, you try to be a little bit careful who you put in that position as well. But it was good, and obviously the extra point was good. Felt like we should have had three in regulation there, but you know, good for Yuki to go in there and get that done.
Yeah, it was good. It was a great ending to the game. We got 5 points on the weekend. That's tremendous. We'd certainly take that this coming weekend. Damon, we're going to let you get out of here. We'll move David Bateson, the director of athletics, in with us. And thanks for being here again tonight. Good job last weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And I just got one last plug. You know, you might hit it. Check/Revive. Yeah. I've got my sweatshirt on here, but there's pop-up shops at War Memorial the next couple of days at Taffy Able tonight at 7 o'clock. I think they're up in the Norris as well. And at Norris the next couple afternoons, I think from 10 to 2, I believe, if I have that right. So, and apparel's going fast. I couldn't believe I went out there today, and there's not a lot left. So if you want apparel, I wouldn't wait till the weekend because I don't think it's going to make it through the weekend. But thank you, Bill, and thank you, everybody. I look forward to talking Thursday morning.
All righty, that's right. Laker Hockey Talk Thursday morning at 8:30 right here on this ESPN station. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back to the Antlers on ESPN 1400. All right, we're back for our third segment of the Laker Hockey Show on a Tuesday night, a cold and blustery Tuesday night, but lots of fans came out, and Dr. David Bateson managed to make it here, so did Damon Witten. And Dave, that was quite a weekend. Let's talk a little bit about the GFL, the planning that went into that, because it culminated with a pretty good night, I thought. I didn't see any, you know, I didn't talk to Damon about it. I probably should have. His cousin, Keith Allen, can sing the national anthems,
well.
Can he?
Yes.
That was really good. I thought he did a great job Friday night, and then we were lucky, went over to GFL and showed the Sioux Ontario fans that we've got an anthem singer over here.
We do, and he did a great job, and that's all part of the event for sure, and got a chance to warm him up a little bit on Friday night, so that helped.
Yeah, it was really good. Let's talk a little bit about the event itself. The official attendance, 3166, I saw today.
Right.
Might have been a few more tickets here and there. Might have been a few less people in the stands. Who knows? I know I ate two tickets that I had. But,
sure.
You know, it was a good crowd. I was impressed. They made a lot of noise. It was a lot of students in the crowd. That makes noise.
Yeah, I think that was one of the great things about it, being able to take the event over. Part of that was showing that college hockey experience. And the student section, you know, really brought a lot of energy to it, as it does in, you know, most great collegiate events, right? And, you know, I was all over the building most of the night, but I got to go down and sit with Lauren for a part of the third period, and I really got to see the students a little bit more up close. And they were in rare form and having fun, and creating their chance and making themselves heard. So it was a lot of fun to see that. We love that energy, and looking forward to carrying that over to Taffy too.
Well, you take them over to Sue Blaster's for an hour and a half before the game, and that's what you're going to get. You know, the drinking age is 19 in Ontario. But
that got by me. I didn't
know. But it was a great event, and I mean, the way it went, let's talk a little bit about the planning, because it didn't just happen 2 weeks ago. We started planning this, you did, a long, long time ago, and you got to tie a lot of things together here. Rob Santa Maria's name's been mentioned by Damon. Right. You can certainly talk about that a bit. I was impressed with how they had their camera people there. They were running the electronics. They had security. I don't know if you had to pay a flat fee to use the building or what, but it went off really well.
It all got worked in, all those things we had to talk about along the way. And, you know, Rob and their crew were just terrific throughout the whole process, you know. And it was a new experience, obviously, working in a new building with new people. And, you know, we have our game production people, Hunter Perry in particular, who runs our kind of scripting, along with Tim Ellis, who was great to have as our PA announcer, because he was having a blast doing it too. But then to your right and to your left were people you hadn't really worked with ever before, you know, and were running video and utilizing the screen and bringing some elements to that event that we wouldn't typically get a chance to do. At the North Center. So those were fun to do and showcase. I think they added a lot of the elements. You were great with us on that, because we did a lot of the historical videos that we wanted to capture anyway, but this is a great way to present those.
Yeah, I couldn't hear any of that. I could see some of the stuff that was going on. I saw Giulio Francella being interviewed by Matt. I thought that was a really good thing to do that. Archie to come out with the mayors of the Twin Sioux and drop a puck before the start of the game. No better person than Arch. He was a tremendous player for us back in the 1960s. I just thought it was really good. And, you know, one of the things that you see there that we need to have, and it's about a $650,000 expenditure, so who knows when we're going to get it. But that video board adds so much to a hockey game.
So much. You know,
you can do so many things.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you just see that virtually everywhere. I'm coming from, you know, major league background too, and NHL and all that. It's just those elements really just add so much to it. Even in my last location at Sam Houston State, we did have a video board for football for a while, but it was very small. And then we got the biggest at FCS, and it just completely changed the environment. And I think it's something we need. I think we all know that, and it's something we have to work towards getting. And I think it will change the environment and our facility as well when it does happen.
Yeah, the one they've got at Michigan Tech's the best one I've seen in our league. It's just tremendous, and they got a really good one at Minnesota State too. The bigger schools that have more money have these sorts of things, mm-hmm. but what you can do for marketing your program and the mm-hmm. game itself and the things you can do during the game, you can multiply by 20 that board.
Your message you can push out. Obviously, you can create a lot of fun stuff that people enjoy. You also can help push your partner messages, you know, out as well. It's just an important element.
No band at the game. That was something people asked me about. I don't know what the situation was there, if we don't have enough numbers or if we maybe had trouble getting across the bridge or something like that. But that's another element of college hockey that is not there for major junior hockey that would be interesting to show the Canadian audience.
It's an attention, a focus from our student life, from our present on down, to be honest with you. That is something we want to make sure continues to get developed and becomes a big part of, you know, our athletic events. We've had the kind of volunteer group doing mm-hmm. this for the last several years, and they come in and they do fine. But, you know, if we can get it just slightly bit more organized and more people in it, for to have a pep band of 25 or 30 really can rock a place. It really can. You know, I would love to see them out with our men's and women's basketball too, because that just changes that environment as well. Those are some of the elements we don't currently have, but we just got to keep working at it.
Yeah, it's one of the shortcomings of no music major, and anyone who plays is someone who played in high school, still has the instrument, wants to help out, wants to volunteer. It's always been that way. And mm-hmm. you know, back in the days of Spencer Zimmerman, a lot of fans will remember him. We had a tremendous pep band in those days at Lake Superior, made a lot of noise in the building. and that's back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, we're talking right there. So sure. Lots of things to talk about, though, and do you see the future of this possibly going to an annual event that's been asked about here
yeah,
tonight?
Yeah, you know, I think we're still downloading from this last weekend, but really I can't imagine us not taking a hard look at it again, because the buzz from this was about as good as I've felt on anything that has happened here in just my short time. So, you know, that reaction was great. It just had the whole event had a different kind of spirit to mm-hmm. it for some reason, and it was really fun. I think it's an event that we would look at typically in the second half of the season, because we have the Great Lakes State Weekend in the front half. So it all depends on how the schedules line up with us and the Greyhounds and, you know, the availability of the teams that we're playing against. So again, we're, as Damon noted, we're thankful to, you know, University of Alabama Huntsville for being cooperative and all that on and helping us make that happen. But you just happen to have a lot of things fall into place, and it's one of those things we won't know until the Greyhound schedule is released and what dates might fit. But I'm with Damon. We want to make this something that we look at doing on an annual basis if we can, and maybe bringing different kinds of things to the mix each time.
Yeah, I think having Tim Lukenda on our board helps a lot too. Tim's a very supportive member of our board for Lake Superior State and for Laker hockey, but he's also a very supportive person with the Sioux Greyhounds. His father, Lou Lukenda,
right,
before him was an owner with the Greyhounds and a tremendous gentleman, also a graduate of Lake Superior State University when it was Michigan Tech Sioux Branch. And, you know, they've got a history with the both, and it helps. I mean, Tim
for sure
probably ran a lot of interference and helped out a lot here with
getting
this game.
Well, that's
where
the call started. I had mentioned it kind of internally a little bit. Tom Coates from the foundation is one of the folks I mentioned the idea to after Damon and I had talked about it a little bit. And I'd done something like this, similar to this in Texas when I was at SAM. We had our rivalry game. We took that to NRG Stadium and partnered with the Houston Texans, and that was a big hit. And that really opened up the Houston territory for us for a lot of things. So this is kind of a mini version of that. And, you know, right there, you know. But the first call made was Tom put me in touch with Tim, you know, and I hadn't met him yet. It was the first time, was via phone. And then we talked about the idea, and he said, yeah, it's worth looking into for sure, be supportive of that. And then he introduced me to Rob Santa Maria, and then we started talking about this. I guess it's been at least a year and a half ago, maybe two almost.
So anybody who thinks this was put together in a hurry,
it wasn't at all.
It took a long time to do
yeah.
this. And I think you're right, too, in paying Damon paid tribute to Hunter and to Kelsey Smith, our sports information director. I thought they did a really good job. And I mean, we had Todd Bell from the WCHA there. I haven't seen him all season, but he was there for that game. And they were doing things on Flow TV. And it was just a really good exposure night for Lake Superior State and for Alabama Huntsville.
It was. And, yeah, those two on our staff really worked really hard for sure, Kelsey and Hunter. Just they always do. And and you know, that additional press, be it from the, you know, September announcement, we had a lot of coverage that we wouldn't necessarily typically get either, and I think that's important for our program to be out there in the in college hockey, Flow TV, different sort of media outlets for us. Anytime the Laker name is out there, it just helps, and this event allowed us to do that. Plus, over there in Sioux Today and the Sioux, their daily paper and all that as well. So got to pound the message a lot for people to hear it. So that's what we're looking to do.
Yeah, we saw Pete Ricci up in the press box. Brad Cacciamiglio was there. Those are people who cover the Greyhounds and cover hockey in general. They know the sport. They've been around a long time, and they gave us good coverage in their publications. We're going to take a break, our final one of the night, and Dave Pateson and I will be right back with more Laker Hockey Show on ESPN 1400. All right, we are back for our final segment on this Tuesday night, the Laker Hockey Show on ESPN 1400. Want to thank Sam Cox Engineering for us back at the studios of Sovereign Communications, and Dave Pateson, the Director of Athletics at Lake Superior State, is with us now. Damon Witten, the head coach, was with us earlier, and We talked about the CCHA. That's the big announcement. You talked on Friday night with me on air about having an announcement this week, and that's what it is. We're going back to being called the Central Collegiate Hockey Association. I guess the only thing I find negative about that is that one of the greatest college hockey conferences in the history of the game, the Western Collegiate Hockey Association, is either going to have three teams in it or be no more.
Yeah, that's always – any change are always tough. You've seen a lot of that in collegiate athletic conferences in the last 10 years. And but I got to tell you, excited about this, about bringing the CCHA name back. I think that certainly – that's instant recognition, instant credibility. It also ties all those folks that were once part of the CCHA, as almost spokespeople being back involved in it. There's just a fond memory of it. And obviously, as Damon talked about, he grew up with it. I was in Columbus during the years that this school was winning the national championships and so on. And I remember all of that. I remember, because Ohio State obviously was part of that as well. But, let me ask you, You lived lived through that conference quite a bit too. What do you think of the whole name?
Well, I like the idea. Obviously, I'm partial to the CCHA. I was wounded when the Big Ten decided they were going to pull the plug on everybody. I understand the economics of why, but you had such a great conference there, the Central Collegiate Hockey Association. You had the big guys, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, and then you had Western Michigan and Bowling Green, the MAC schools, who were always pretty good. Miami University, which was a doormat at first, but then got pretty good. And then you had Lake Superior, and you had Northern in there and out of there, and you had Ferris State, and you had the small guys, and everybody was competitive. And I don't think you had it was so competitive. Everybody fought everybody else. I mean, we had tremendous games in the late 80s and early 90s with Michigan and Michigan State. It took us a long time. It was mid-80s before we started to beat those teams with any sort of regularity. But once we got it going, I mean, you got 20 scholarships in those days, 18 now. But you got 20 guys who can play on the ice, and they're all – it depends on the players. And it was a great league, and I was really hurt when they took it apart, but we went to the WCHA, and Chris Dunbar and company were in charge then, and they had no choice. They had to go where the league was, but I understand that.
Yeah, it kind of got cobbled together.
It's great to have it back, though. I love the CCHA. It's not going to be the same. People are online now complaining that, oh, you don't have Michigan and all. Well, no kidding. They did that, not us.
They're probably not pulling out of the Big Ten.
No, but not anytime soon.
Not anytime soon, but I think it's just great, and I think it's exciting, and I think we have seven great schools, and there'll be plans, I'm sure, at some point for an eight. That isn't by any means settled at this point in time, look forward to that getting underway in 2021-22.
Yeah, we're going to be playing this next season as a 10-team WCHA, and then that will come to an end, and there'll be a new chapter, and it'll be the CCHA again. It'll be a 7-team league, and it'll be solid, though, because it's going to help so much with travel costs, and it's a bus league.
It's a Midwestern-based league, and the schools that we're already all familiar with, and the eighth member you would like to keep in that footprint, so we're not drifting too far off the map one way or another. But economics, if you look at reasons conferences do what they do, a lot of it does come down to economics, right? And for us, that's all of us that are in this league, new league, that's what it came down to. And in terms of the expense side, we all have to watch as well. So it just got, I think, again, just a little bit stronger league geographically a better fit.
Well, there's nobody that wants to see the two Alaskas and Huntsville go by the wayside here, but we can't afford it anymore. I mean, you look at you're talking bottom lines, Lake Superior, Ferris State, Northern Michigan. Very, very difficult for us to afford $30,000, $35,000, $40,000 per trip to go to somewhere like Fairbanks or to Anchorage. Last year we had to go two separate trips there, and that's a tremendous financial burden on a small institution. So, this is why this is coming down and why we're going back to the CCHA, and it's going to be the longest trip we'll have now will be Bemidji and Minnesota State Mankato, which are about dead even. One's southern Minnesota, the other one's pretty far north, but those will be the tough trips. And hey, Michigan Tech, Northern Michigan, Ferris State, Bowling Green, those are easy trips,
right? Exactly. And we'll see who the eighth member is when that happens, assuming that it does. And then, you know, the divisional split on that. Maybe we'll be on the same side as Northern.
Yeah, we got a big game coming up this weekend, too. I didn't really talk to Damon about it. We'll hit it probably on the Thursday morning show. But we're going to lose some pretty good hockey players here. They're going to be graduating. The seniors are going to go out the door. And I know you know who they all are now, Dave. Right. You've been around a couple of years. Max Humitz, one of our best hockey players. Colin Sackelman, we've been without him most of the year. Brendan McKay is going to be leaving. Brian Basilico, Braden Gelsinger, who's been hurt a lot this year but is in his senior year. Ian Johnson has had trouble getting in the lineup this season, but he's still a great kid and been a big part of this program. And Tyler Anderson's going to leave as well. Right. Even though he's a junior, he's used up all of his eligibility, so he will be honored, and that'll be this Saturday night, and that's a big night for us. We do that pregame now, and you're going to have seven guys to introduce, and that'll be a big night for the parents and the players.
I think that and every year it is for any sports team, you know, and paying tribute to your outgoing seniors is always a huge thing. It's always a tough thing, too. And those guys, as you rattle them off, you know, you get to know them and they're, you know, we have a really good group there, really good people, you know. Colin, I felt so bad for that. There's a guy that just couldn't be a more upbeat, a great representative of our university. And unfortunately, we lost him over in the year with the knee injury. But he's just, you know, always positive. And Max, you know, has had a great career, and the other guys have been great contributors as well. So they've tasted success, you know, along the way during their time, and, you know, had a great season last year and then been competitive this year. Still don't have as many wins as we'd like, but there's a season left, and, you know, some really good things could still happen here.
Yeah, we're down to two games with Northern Michigan at home this weekend. That'll finish out the home season. Then we go to Ferris State next week for two games. We always finish at Ferris State, and then we do go into the playoffs. The Lakers are most likely going to be the seventh-place team, which means right now they would be going to Bemidji State. Now, that'll be a tough assignment, but they'll be competitive. You can be assured of that. Dave, thanks for being here tonight on the Laker Hockey Show and talking about the league and about the GFL game. And thanks to Damon Witten as well for being here the first half of our show tonight. Matt Pocket Engineering is here. He'll have tickets to give away and an Antlers gift card as well. Thanks to the Antlers and the folks here and everybody who's here with us tonight, our fans, our great fan base. And we'll be back on Thursday morning at 8:35 with Laker Hockey Talk. Don't forget, Northern's here this weekend. That's it on the Laker Hockey Show. Till next Tuesday night on ESPN 1400.